Everybody. You know, traditionally in Advent, there's a theme associated with each week. And this week, traditionally, it is the theme of joy. And there are certainly times in our lives when joy feels like a dream, when we must dare to plant seeds of joy, to hold out hope that joy could come. And in our passage this morning, one of the lectionary texts for this Sunday, we find a song of joy. Mary, overwhelmed by the news of this angel who has come, telling her that she will bear a child and this child will change the world. She responds with joy. She is, in fact, we many think, singing a song of joy for what has happened. And so let's read that passage together this morning. This is Luke 1, 39 to 55. Again, the angel has just come to Mary. She has spoken those famous words of acceptance, of receiving this dream that God has for the world and agreeing to it, to participate in it. And then a few days later, Mary hurried to the hill country of Judea, to the town where Zechariah lived. She entered the house and greeted Elizabeth. And at the sound of Mary's greeting, Elizabeth's child leaped within her, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. Elizabeth gave a glad cry and exclaimed to Mary, "God has blessed you above all women, and your child is blessed. Why am I so honored that the mother of my Lord should visit me? When I heard your greeting, the baby in my womb jumped for joy. You are blessed because you believed that the Lord would do what he said." Mary responded, "Oh, how my soul praises the Lord, how my spirit rejoices in God, my Savior. For he took notice of his lowly servant girl, and from now on, all generations will call me blessed. For the Mighty One is holy, and he has done great things for me. He shows mercy from generation to all who fear him. His mighty arm has done tremendous things. He has scattered the proud and haughty ones. He has brought down princes from their thrones and exalted the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away with empty hands. He has helped his servant Israel and remembered to be merciful, for he made this promise to our ancestors, to Abraham and his children forever." Mary, I think you could say, was a dreamer. She saw a future that hadn't yet happened yet, in which the poor and the humble are lifted up, those in power are brought low, where needs are met, hungry bellies are filled. But what Mary saw was a future, a dream, something to happen, not something that had already happened. She had eyes to see what could be. I like to think of Mary as having had a determined, holy imagination. Kelly Brown Douglas, author, writes this when she's asked about Advent and what it means. She says, "What does it mean for us to be a people of Advent in our time? It means we must be grounded in the absolute belief that the world can be and will be made better. We must carry forth into the world a determined, holy imagination of God's future." We are invited, I think even called, to carry God's dreams into the world, to be people who say, "This is not the way that things are supposed to be, nor are they the way that things have to be. There is a better future. There is another way. But to do that, to be people who carry God's future into the present, we have to have an imagination that is determined and holy. Here during Advent, we've been doing this time, this block of time in our worship a little differently. Instead of just me talking for a while, I've been offering a reflection, but it's been mixed with some discussion and then finally some action. And we're going to do that again today. And today, we're actually going to mix reflection and discussion even a little bit more than we did last week. The way that we'll do the discussion part is through the chat window. Or if you're feeling like you would rather just unmute your line, you can also just say whatever it is you would like to say. But we're going to share some thoughts and some ideas here as we go along and as we reflect on these words of Mary. And the first question I want to ask you to reflect on and then to let us have a little bit of discussion about is this: what strikes you about this phrase, a determined, holy imagination? And if you want, you could break it down. You know, what does it mean, do you think, to have a determined imagination? Doesn't imagination just kind of come whimsically, naturally, spontaneously? What does it mean to have a determined imagination? And what does it mean to have a holy imagination? I invite you to reflect on that. If you're with other folks in your household, you can have a conversation about it, bounce ideas off of each other, but then would love for you to put whatever thought you have in the chat window, or again, just feel free to unmute yourself. Let's have a little bit of conversation as much as we can here over Zoom about what this idea might mean and what it might look like. Reminds us of Anne of Green Gables. You're gonna have to say a little bit more about that, Workman family. Even though I've seen it, I'm not as cool as you all are, and I don't know exactly. So enlighten us. Tell us a little bit more about what you mean about that.
Well, first we mean the book.
Not the movies, you're saying. Not the, okay.
Yes, she just has an imagination and she's always hoping and always dreaming. No matter what the outcome is, she's always unconvinced that there's not a reason to dream and hope.
Awesome. Determined, yes, I hear you saying. That's awesome, okay. Determined imagination might include not allowing yourself to be talked out of your dreams. And they knew what you were talking about with the Anne of Green Gables reference. Yeah, not allowing yourself to be talked out of your dreams, boy. Absolutely. All right, Debbie, you're going to have to say more about this. I'll play, you know, like I don't know anything, but I really actually don't know anything about this either. The Snow Angel by Debbie Boone. So you'll have to say more about that or not, and we can Google it and figure it out for ourselves. Lucy, Janelle, Mike, imagination with a purpose. I think that's helpful. Yep. Amy, you're saying something similar. It looks like a determined imagination is to be goal-driven in your creativity, which again, to me, sounds similar to this idea of having a purpose in what you are imagining about. It's good. Yeah, Lene, good. Belief in God's promises, the impossible realized. Yeah. Dreams often feel that way, right? They feel impossible, out of reach. So do God's promises sometimes. We'll actually talk a little bit more about that in a moment. Deb, I see you. Okay. Then Teresa, I guess, can maybe tell us what you're talking about. thank you. The girl in the story sees what could be. Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness you put me on the spot, Deb.
Good. Anybody else want to chime in? I think we're hitting on a lot of what I was thinking about with this as well, but also you're offering some different insights too and some really nice examples of what this might look like. So I appreciate that. Let's keep moving here. We'll have some time for some more discussion in just a few minutes. But I think, you know, I think when some folks are saying that it's the impossible, right, or that sometimes it feels out of reach, this future, I think that's true. I think God's dreams for the world can feel this way as well. And so it takes a holy and determined imagination to see a future where broken relationships are mended, right? I mean, it doesn't take much, if any, imagination. And therefore, it's a lot easier to believe that a relationship will never get better. It takes a determined, holy imagination to believe that division and hatred could be healed, right? Again, nothing or very little is required of us to believe that there's a future out there that looks just like the one we are in. We can imagine the status quo remaining the status quo. And we know that that really won't take much of us to have that become true. But for hatred to be healed, for inequities to be made right, right, for the world that God has a dream for that to become a reality, it takes an imagination. It takes, you could use the word faith, and it's a determined one. It's a perseverant one. Maybe that's a better way to say, instead of determined imagination, you could say perseverant imagination. But you know, when Mary walks into the door of Elizabeth's home and shares her news, not only is Elizabeth elated, but even the baby in her womb leaps for joy. It's really quite a stunning picture. Luke's account there in that home there in Judea is one overflowing with joy. In fact, then Mary responds with some of the best known words in the Bible, this Magnificat, an outpouring of poetry and praise. And on the one hand, this all makes perfect sense. Mary's just been given incredible news, the best news, the most unbelievable news, but incredible news. How could there not be joy on the one hand? And yet, as I thought about this more this week, as I was reflecting on Mary in this moment when she's with Elizabeth, just a few days after the announcement from the angel, yes, Mary has been given an incredible, stunning promise. But that's all that it is at this point, right? I mean, there are months and months ahead before this child is even born. And then there are years, decades before this child is old enough to do any of the things that Mary believes God wants to see happen. So Mary has a promise of something happening, but it hasn't happened yet. It is just, at this point, a seed. And this week in the devotional, and by the way, if you don't have the digital version of the devotional that I think Teresa sent out a couple weeks ago now, but there's a devotional along with Advent here. And I think it's in tomorrow's entry, woman professor at Columbia Seminary writes about the idea, when she's reflecting on Mary, of anticipatory joy. I like that phrase. There's something about it that's kind of caught my attention this week. Mary anticipates the fulfillment of God's promises. Again, let's just, where are we in this moment? In this moment, the child has not been born, nor has he ushered in God's kingdom. But Mary has the trust and the determined holy imagination to believe that it will happen. And that produces in her this outpouring of joy. See, what if sowing joy in our lives was like sowing a seed? Near my home, there stands this tree in Garfield Park. It's my favorite tree in the world. It is a giant oak tree, 100, 125, maybe 150 years old. If I live to be half of this tree's current age, I will have lived a good life. And it's still alive and well, towering in the middle of the park here. But as you know, this giant of a tree came from this. And of course, we know that this is true. But if you knew nothing about biology, you would not take the odds that a seed like that could become a tree like that. At first glance, seeds make no sense. Really, look at the thing. It's nothing. It seems impossible that anything bigger than it, number one, let alone a towering, giant structure that lasts for centuries or more, could come from that. How could that actually, they make no sense. Which is why I think you could say that planting a seed is an act of faith. It's a move of defiant hope. We dare to dream when we plant seeds. And I'm actually talking about literal seeds here. We're dreaming. We have an imagination for something that could be. And I do think it's true when we plant seeds of joy as well. Because seeds of joy may feel impossible. How could God's dreams for the world ever become reality? Right? Haven't you looked around? Don't you see what a mess this world can be? And so to plant seeds of joy is a move of really defiant hope, to trust that God's promises will become reality, takes a determined, holy imagination. But if we are willing to plant, to believe that the things we do today, no matter how small, will bear something much greater in the future, then we will find a joy breaking up out of the dry, cracked ground of this world. You know, often I think we imagine joy to be a giant, towering emotion, right? When we hear the word joy, we think of big, expressive, overflowing moments, which were overtaken and swept up by joy. And joy can be like this, like a giant tree. But what if joy, like a seed, could also start small? I mean, isn't that what we see in Mary? A seed has been planted, a promise made. And that seed has not become fully grown yet. When we meet Mary here in Luke 1, that seed, it remains hidden in the ground, or literally in this instance, in the womb. The child has not been born. He has not grown up to do anything yet. And yet, it does not lessen Mary's joy. She is able to anticipate because of her, I think, determined, holy imagination. She is able to anticipate what will be. And that is what creates joy in her right now. You know, in verse 45, Elizabeth says to Mary, "You are blessed because you believed that the Lord would do what he said." I think Mary's joy has something to do with this. This is the determined kind of holy imagination part. This is the willingness to plant seeds, to believe that the Lord would do what the Lord said. She believed, Mary did, that the seed planted would one day become a tree. Was it an act of faith and trust? Absolutely. And it produced in her great joy. So let's have a little bit of discussion again. Sometimes joy can be big, fully grown, like a tree. But other times, perhaps it is like a seed. And so what are small actions we can take that might help us cultivate joy? And, or you can consider either of these questions or both of them. What can we do to cultivate a determined, holy imagination? I think those are two different questions that are related, but I think they're different. Let's have a little bit of conversation about these here for a moment. And while you're reflecting, I'll just share something that someone shared with me in the chat. They just messaged me and said, looks like they thought that was a bur oak, which helps to support over 500 species of insects and then support birds and mammals from those insects. You know, it reminds me of Jesus saying about the mustard seed, the seed that becomes this largest of plants, and it provides shelter and shade for the birds of the air. That's what we want to become. Joy sometimes is that large, but how do we take small steps and plant seeds right now that might help cultivate joy? Andy and Chris mentioned here that a practice of gratitude produces joy. Absolutely. If we had a little bit more time today, we would have looked at one of the other lectionary passages, and I'll just type it here in the window. One of the other passages this week, I'm not going to type the actual passage itself, but I'll give you the reference. It's 6-7 verses. That's all that Psalm 126 is. It's pretty brief. Half of it is looking back on what God has done, which I think, Andy and Chris, to just go along with what you're saying, is an act of gratitude, looking back at what God has done. And then that fuels them to move into the future, the second half of the psalm, believing that tears that are planted, that's the language, tears are planted like seeds in the ground, but they produce a harvest of joy. It's a powerful little psalm and would be worth reflecting on this week. I've been learning more and more about how fully experiencing pain and challenge is what allows for grounded, embodied joy. So how do we cultivate joy in our lives? This feels perhaps counterintuitive.
Can I say something real quick?
Of course.
Just that psalm you said, isn't the verse, what is it? The tears planted? Yeah,
they plant tears. Mm-hmm.
So you were saying that as I was typing it, so I think there might be something right there in that.
Oh, the baby's jumping.
Yeah, I think that it's as if, I don't know, we're married and connected to one another somehow. That's a wonderfully, it's a wonderful moment of connection. Bethany, I think we are saying something very similar. The psalm is saying something very similar to what you've experienced and learned. It's counterintuitive again. but this is why when 2 weeks ago we talked about lament as being the doorway to hope. Again, these are counterintuitive things. Why would we lament? Why would we want to do that? Why would we want to cry out? Shouldn't we just move on, kind of pull ourselves up and get on with it? Well, that's actually not the way to hope. We short circuit the process. And the same is around joy. Joy becomes elusive when we are unwilling to sit in and feel and experience the difficulty, the pain, because it's actually in that God meets us. This is the mystery of it all, and begins to transform the pain, the anxiety, the fear into something new. Appreciate that, Deb, to remember the isolated. So an act of empathy, if I'm reading a little bit into what you're saying here, Deb, so feel free to correct me. But the act of empathy is something that can help create joy. I think that any time that we are more connected to each other, the opportunity and the possibility of joy increases. So I appreciate you saying that. Doing a random act of kindness for someone else can cultivate joy. Isn't that interesting? Sacrifice, which is what that is. I mean, even if it's a simple, quick act of kindness, it is still something in which we are giving of ourselves for someone else. Again, counterintuitive. How could giving up part of me lead to joy? Shouldn't that make me sad? Shouldn't that create a depression and angst in me? Something else actually seems to happen. Good. The Katarsky family doing silly things together. Oh, I love that. I love that. Joy shows up, can show up in any moment of life. This is also, again, one of the paradoxes and mysteries, and certainly it can show up when we are free, when we have the kind of relationships that allow us to be free enough to be silly and goofy. I appreciate that. Sleep or rest and action, too, that probably helps both the cultivation of joy and a determined holy imagination. Fatigue makes everything harder, I think. And so that simple act, I think is right, can help cultivate these important things in us. Yeah. So we've got a good little list going here. I'll add one. And again, if you have others, keep them coming. Last night, I read an article about how the Hubble Space Telescope, well, NASA just released 20 or so brand new photographs from the Hubble Telescope, celebrate the 30th anniversary of Hubble. I found so much joy in that. In entering into the wonder of this cosmos, the scale, the unimaginable scale of it, the beauty of it, I just was more joyful. That simple act for me helped cultivate joy. What else? Anything else come to mind? We're going to move from this into our action. And here's what I want to invite everyone to do. There's never going to be any pressure, of course. We're never going to call on people to put something in the chat window or force you to somehow turn your video on and, you know, answer these questions of discussion. But I do invite everyone here, because this is just you by yourself. You don't, the expectation is not that you're putting this in the chat window. So I just invite you, every one of us, to consider here for a moment, what is one seed you will plant this week? One action you will take to either cultivate a determined holy imagination or to plant a seed of joy. Just going to give you a moment here to consider that and to make a commitment to yourself to follow through on planting that seed.